A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors. Throughout, the set changes like in a play. Characters act parts out or narrate to us. Prop department men in flat caps bring or exchange various things to the main characters. A title appears. Poison. The moon shines on a lakeside bungalow lined with ferns. Chatterjee as Woods pulls up in a vintage Moke car. He wears a military uniform. He casts his gaze on us.
It was midnight when I drove home.
He climbs out.
As I approached the gates of the bungalow, I switched off the headlamp so the beam wouldn't swing through the side window and wake Harry Pope. I needn't have bothered. His light was still on. I parked the car and went the four steps up to the screen porch, counting each precisely in the dark so I wouldn't take an extra step which wasn't there at the top. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Woods enters the bungalow and its exterior pulls away. In a bedroom, Henry as Harry lies awake.
I went to Harry's room, opened it quietly and looked in. He was lying on the bed awake. He didn't move. He didn't even turn his head, but I heard him say, whispering, almost inaudible,
"Help.
Help."
A book sits open on Harry's stomach.
I pushed the door open and started quickly across the room.
Stop.
Stop. I could hardly hear a word. He seemed to be straining enormously to produce a sound.
Help.
Help. What's the matter, Harry?
Take off shoes.
Take off shoes. The way he was speaking reminded me of George Barling after he got shot in the stomach when he stood leaning against a crate containing a spare airplane engine, gripping himself with both hands and muttering about the Japanese pilot in just the same hoarse, straining half-whisper Harry was using now. Then George Barling bent over, of course, and died.
Take off shoes.
Take off shoes.
Woods briefly looks down.
I couldn't understand about the shoes, but I wasn't going to object.
He gives his boots to a prop man, then gives us a passing glance. He slowly nears Harry.
What is it, Harry?
Don't touch.
Woods lowers his eye level to Harry.
He was lying on his back with a single sheet covering three quarters of his body. He was wearing a pair of striped pajamas and sweating terribly. It was a hot night. I was sweating myself, but not like Harry. His whole face was wet and the pillow was soaked. It looked like malaria to me. What is it, Harry?
Crite.
What?
Crite.
Crite?
Snake.
You've been bitten by a crite? Where? How long ago?
How?
What?
Harry stares unblinkingly at the ceiling.
Didn't bite yet.
That confused me. I gave Harry a funny look.
Crite on stomach. Asleep.
Wood stares wide-eyed.
I jumped backwards. I couldn't help it. I stared at his stomach, or rather at the rumpled sheet that covered it. It was impossible to tell if there was something underneath. You don't really mean there's a crite lying on your stomach right now, asleep?
Yes.
With a strained expression, Woods cautiously approaches the bed. He looks fixedly at Harry's stomach.
How'd it get there? I shouldn't have asked the question, of course. I should have just told him to keep quiet.
Lying on back, reading, felt something on chest behind book tickling.
Harry works his mouth.
From corner of eye, saw little crite sliding over pajamas. Small. Maybe 10 inches. You mustn't move, lay frozen watching it. Thought it would go over top of sheet.
Harry paused and was silent for a moment. He was watching to make sure his whispering wasn't disturbing the thing that lay there.
Harry focuses upward.
It went under. Held it through pajamas, moving on stomach. Then it stopped. Now lying there asleep. I've been waiting.
How long?
Hours and hours. Can't keep still much longer, need to cough.
In the gypsy house, Roald sits in his chair and looks at us.
As a matter of fact, it wasn't a surprising thing for a crite to do. They linger around people's houses and go for the warm places. The surprising thing was that Harry hadn't been bitten so far. The bite is ferociously deadly unless you catch it at once with a dose of anti-venom immediately at hand. Slim little things, they look like this.
On his lapboard, a snake moves in a jar.
One might slip discreetly through the just cracked open door of a small child's bedroom, for instance. The manager of a tea estate once told me about a sheep bitten on the hind leg. When he cut open the carcass, its blood ran pitch, black as tar.
In Harry's room, Woods gulps and Harry perspires.
All right, Harry, I said, and now I was whispering too. Don't move. And don't talk unless you have to. It won't bite unless it's frightened. We'll fix it.
A prop man secures a sheath to Woods' pocket.
I went softly out of the room in my stocking feet and fetched a small sharp knife from the kitchen. I put it in my trouser pocket, ready to use instantly in case Harry did something to frighten the crite and got bitten. I was ready to cut Harry open and suck out the venom.
In Harry's room.
Harry, I said, I think the best thing to do is for me to draw back the sheet very gently and have a look.
You idiot.
There was no expression in his voice. He spoke each word too slowly, carefully and softly for that. The expression was in the eyes and around the corners of the mouth, as you can see.
Light will startle, snake will kill.
Good point. How about I just whip back the sheet quick and brush the thing off the instant?
Get doctor.
The way he looked at me told me I should have thought of that myself in the first place. A doctor, of course. That's it. I'll get Dr. Gannaby. I tiptoed out to the hall, looked up Dr. Gannaby's number in the book, lifted the phone and told the operator to hurry.
Woods picks up a phone's handset. On the other side of the wall, a bald imdad as Gannaby answers his phone.
Dr. Gannaby, this is Supervisor Woods.
Hello, Mr. Woods. You're not in bed yet.
Please come around at once and bring serum for a crite.
Serum for a crite?
Who's been bitten? The question came so sharply it was like a small explosion in my ear. No one. No one yet. Harry Pope's in bed and he's got one sleeping on his stomach under the sheet. For about 3 seconds, there was silence on the line.
The two trade glances at us.
Then speaking slowly, not like an explosion now, slowly, precisely, Dr. Gannaby said,
he's not to move or talk. Do you understand?
Of course, Doctor.
I'm coming now.
He rang off and I went back to the bedroom. Harry's eyes walked me to his bed. Dr. Gannaby's coming, he said, for you to lie still.
What the bloody hell does he think I've been doing?
He said absolutely no talking, either of us.
Shut up, then.
When he said this, the muscles on one side of his mouth, the muscles used for smiling, started twitching with rapid little downward movements that continued for a while after he finished speaking. I didn't like that. I didn't like the way he talked either. Dr. Gannaby's car sped up to the front of the bungalow.
Woods halts shortly to look at us.
I went out to meet him.
On the porch, Gannaby walks past Woods.
Where is he?
Dr. Gannaby then stopped to hear my answer. He walked on past me into the hall. He put his bag down on a chair. He was wearing soft-soled bedroom slippers. He walked across the floor noiselessly, delicately, like a careful cat. Harry watched him out of the sides of his eyes. When Dr. Gannaby reached the bed, he looked down at Harry and smiled, confident and reassuring, nodding his head as if to say,
no need to worry. This is a simple matter. Just leave it to Dr. Gannaby.
He turned and went into the kitchen, and I followed him.
In the kitchen, a prop man pops in.
He opened his bag.
First thing is to try to get some serum into him, but I must do it neatly, can't make him flinch.
He held a hypodermic in one hand and a small bottle in the other. He stuck the needle through the rubber top and drew up a pale yellow liquid. He handed the syringe to me.
Hold that till I ask for it.
He returned to the room.
In Harry's room, Gannaby takes a moment before going to Harry's bedside.
Harry's eyes were bright now and wide open. Dr. Gannaby bent over and cautiously rolled up Harry's pajama sleeve to the elbow without moving the arm. I noticed he stood well away from the bed. He whispered,
I'm going to give you an injection, Mr. Pope, just a prick. Don't move, don't tighten your stomach muscles, let them go limp.
Harry looked at the syringe. His smiling muscle began to twitch again.
Gannaby displays props to us.
Dr. Gannaby took a piece of rubber tubing and tied it tight around Harry's bicep. He sponged a small area of the bare forearm with alcohol. He held up the syringe to the light, squinting at the calibration, squirting out some of the yellow fluid. Harry was now sweating all over his face, so it shone like it was made thick with face cream melting on his skin and running down on the pillow. I could see the blue vein on the inside of his forearm, swollen now under the tourniquet, and I saw the needle above the vein, Gannaby holding it flat against the arm, sliding the needle sideways through the skin and into the vein, sliding it slowly and firmly so it went in smooth as into cheese. Harry looked at the ceiling and closed his eyes and opened them again, but didn't move. Gannaby leaned forward, putting his mouth close to Harry's ear.
Now you'll be all right, even if it bites you. But don't move, I'll be back in a moment.
In the kitchen.
Is he safe now, I asked.
No, it might save him, it might not.
Dr. Gannaby wiped his forehead with his handkerchief and stood frowning, nibbling his lip.
There is a way to do this, there is a way to do this, there is a way to do this.
He was speaking slowly and trying to think the thing out while he talked.
Wood stares at Gannaby, who looks at us.
We're going to administer an anesthetic to the creature where it lies.
Woods briefly addresses us.
It was a splendid suggestion.
It's not safe because the snake is cold-blooded and anesthetic doesn't work well or quickly with cold-blooded animals, but I don't have any other ideas. Ethyl chloroform.
I nodded.
Ethyl chloroform, which one?
Was he asking me? I don't know.
Chloroform!
He took my arm and pulled me to the hall.
Woods shuffles ahead, then steps out.
Drive to my house. By the time you get there, the boy will be waiting for you. Here's the key to my poisons cupboard. Take a bottle of chloroform. It has an orange label. The name is printed on it, I think. I'll stay here in case anything happens. Be quick!
My shoes.
You don't need shoes.
Gannaby pushes him out.
I drove fast, and in 15 minutes, I was back with a bottle of chloroform.
Wood steps back in with a bottle of chloroform.
He knows what we're going to do, but he's losing his nerve, which is understandable. I'm not sure how much longer he can last.
From below, Gannaby and Woods periodically glance up at us.
Harry was lying on the bed in precisely the same position as before. His face was white and wet. He turned his eyes towards me. I smiled at him and nodded. Dr. Gannaby knelt and picked up the hollow tube he'd used as a tourniquet, now with a small paper funnel fitted into one end of it. He slowly untucked a little section of the sheet out from under the mattress, then took the rubber tube, inserted it, and slid it under the sheet towards Harry's body.
In Harry's room.
I don't know how long it took him to slide that tube in a few inches. It may have been 20 minutes, it may have been 40. I never once saw the tube move, but the visible part of it grew gradually shorter. Dr. Gannaby himself was sweating now, large pearls standing out over his forehead and along his upper lip, but his hands were perfectly steady and his eyes were glued to the area of crumpled sheet above Harry's stomach. Without looking up, he held out his hand for the chloroform. I twisted out the ground glass stopper and put the bottle right into his hand, not letting go until I was sure he had a good hold on it.
Mr. Pope, I'm going to soak the mattress. It's going to be very cold under your body. Be ready for it and don't move.
Get on with it!
For the first time, Harry raised his voice. Dr. Gannaby looked up sharply, watched him a few seconds, and went back to his business. He poured a few drops into the paper funnel and waited while it ran down the tube. He poured some more and waited again.
Gannaby pours chloroform into a funnel. The ceiling fan turns. Juxtaposed to Gannaby pouring, Wood stands in a white room with a fresh scar on his forehead.
The heavy, sickening smell of chloroform spread out over the room, bringing with it faint, unpleasant memories of nurses and surgeons in a white room with a long white table. Dr. Gannaby was pouring steadily now, and I could see the heavy vapor of the awful stuff swirling like smoke above the paper funnel.
In Harry's room.
He paused, poured one more funnelful, and handed the bottle back to me. Slowly, he drew out the rubber tube from under the sheet, then stood up. The accumulated strain of this painstaking procedure must have been enormous, because when he turned and whispered to me, his voice sounded like this.
We'll give it 15 minutes just to be safe.
I leaned over to tell Harry. We're going to give it 15 minutes.
I heard him!
This time, Dr. Gannaby sprang round. His small face suddenly very angry. He stared at Harry, a cold stone. Harry's smiling muscle began to twitch again. We waited for 15 full minutes beside the bed, during every second of which Dr. Gannaby watched Harry's face in the most curious, profoundly intense, arresting gaze. The little doctor was concentrating all his willpower on keeping Harry absolutely still and absolutely quiet. He never once took his eyes off the patient, and although he made no sound, he seemed somehow to be shouting at him all the time, shouting something like,
"Don't move, don't speak, damn you, you're not spoiling this now, you hear me?"
Lights flash.
In the silence, Harry lay there twitching his mouth, sweating, closing his eyes, opening them, looking at me, looking at the sheet, looking at the ceiling, never looking at Dr. Gannaby. Yet somehow Dr. Gannaby was holding him.
Harry's eyes drift to the side.
I had a feeling someone was blowing up a huge balloon and I could see it was going to burst, but I couldn't turn away. Finally, Dr. Gannaby nodded and I knew he was ready to proceed.
Go over to the other side of the bed. We'll each take one side of the sheet and draw it back together. Very slowly, please. Keep still, Mr. Pope.
Gannaby nods at Woods, then they gingerly lift the sheet from Harry. Gannaby blinks rapidly before they pull the sheet farther down.
The whole of Harry's chest was visible now. I saw the white cord of his pajama trousers neatly tied in a bow. A little farther below, I saw a mother-of-pearl button. That was something I never had on my pajamas, a fly button, let alone a mother-of-pearl one. Odd how one sometimes has frivolous thoughts at exciting moments. Apart from the button, there was nothing on his stomach.
They remove the sheet, then squat by the bed.
Don't move, Mr. Pope.
Dr. Gannaby began to peer around along the side of Harry's body and under his legs.
Be careful, it could be anywhere. It could be up the leg of your pajamas.
Harry sat up. It was the first time he'd moved.
Woods hops back.
Suddenly, Harry jumped up, stood on his bed and shook his legs one after the other violently in the air. At that moment, we both thought he'd been bitten. Dr. Gannaby was already scrambling for a scalpel and a tourniquet. But then Harry ceased his leaping, wriggling, stood still, looked down at the mattress he was standing on and shouted,
"It's not there!"
Dr. Gannaby straightened up. He looked at Harry. Harry was all right. He had been bitten. He wasn't going to get bitten. He wasn't going to get killed. And everything was fine. Sort of.
Maybe you were dreaming, Mr. Pope.
Woods slowly shifts his tense gaze to us. Harry straightens his stance on the bed. Gannaby watches.
The way Dr. Gannaby said it, I knew the teasing in his voice was not seriously intended. He was only easing up a bit after the extreme strain. Harry didn't take it that way. He stood on his bed in his striped pajamas, glaring at Dr. Gannaby, and the color began to spread out over his cheeks.
You're suggesting I'm a liar?
Gannaby furrows his brow and glances at us.
Dr. Gannaby remained absolutely still, watching Harry. Harry took a pace forward on the bed. There was a shining look in his eyes.
You dirty little Bengali sewer rat.
Shut up, Harry, I said.
You dirty brown filth.
Shut up, Harry!
Backwards!
Shut your mouth!
Gannaby slams a chair and breaks it. Woods holds his knife.
Dr. Gannaby left the room and I followed him into the hall and onto the screen porch. He's out of his mind, I said. He doesn't know what he's saying. We went down the steps and across the drive in the darkness to the doctor's old Morris motor car. He opened the door and got inside. You did a miraculous thing, I said. You saved his life.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, you might have. He owes you his life. I mean, he owes you his life, Doctor.
No, he doesn't.
Outside, Gannaby sits in a car.
I'm sorry.
You can't be.
Gannaby puts on his medical side cap. Woods looks at us. In the gypsy house, Roald stares at us.
Dr. Ganderby started the engine and drove off.
Roald sticks a cigarette in his mouth. He picks up a pencil and writes on his notepad. Cut to black. Text appears. Dahl began writing Poison in January 1950. He named the character Woods after a fellow RAF Squadron 80 pilot killed during the Battle of Athens. Opening credits. Logo. Text appears under an ombre paintbrush stroke that tapers off into flying geese. Indian paintbrush. Netflix and Indian paintbrush present an American empirical picture from the short story by Roald Dahl. Starring, in order of appearance, Dev Patel, Benedict Cumberbatch, Rafe Fiennes, Ben Kingsley. Written for the screen and directed by Wes Anderson. Audio description provided by International Digital Center. Written by Kathleen Finn and voiced by Kimberly Chatterjee. Credits. Produced by Wes Anderson, Stephen Rails, Jeremy Dawson. Director of Photography Robert Yeoman, ASC. Production designer Adam Stockhausen. Costume designer Kasia Wallika Maimani. Credits continue. Copyright 2023 Netflix. Logo. A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.